Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. Catherine Collins is author of The Nature of Investing. After a long and successful career in equity management at Fidelity Management and Research Company, Catherine reinvented herself, earning a Master of Theological Studies degree at Harvard Divinity School. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
You know, Catherine, that's quite a leap from stock trading to philosophy. What made you take that leap?
You know, it's funny. I don't think it's a path that's been taken by too many people. And yet the parallels between my theology studies and my studies of natural systems and my investing career were really much stronger than I even imagined myself. I really reached a point in my career as an investor where I wanted to step back a little bit and reflect on the real purpose of investing in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, I found that going to study philosophy and moral philosophy, really more specifically, was a great place to start.
Well, your book speaks to the idea that following natural systems is a better way of looking at your investments and, I guess, looking at running companies and the like. Can you describe that a little bit for us?
Sure. Well, one trend that I experienced firsthand as an investor over the last 20, 25 years is that we've taken increasingly a little bit of a factory approach to investing, always looking for more efficiency, more automation, more mechanization in some ways. And this trend started to trouble me after a while, and it eventually led me to the study of natural systems. And the point I've reached in those studies is this examination of biomimicry as a great model. And what biomimicry asks you to do before you make a decision or design a product or a process is to pause for a moment, try to reflect on exactly what function it is that you're trying to perform. You know, what's the point? And to be clear on that, and then to ask yourself, what would nature do? WWND, you know, how would nature perform this same essential function? And to use that as your starting point instead of leaping straight for the factory model.
So this is a new word to everyone. It's biomimicry, and it's obviously mimicking the biology and what's going on in nature. But drill down a little bit and give us some examples of how we would follow a natural system for something.
Sure. So one premise that is embedded in a lot of business and investing endeavors is the premise of growth. And pretty often we take some shortcuts in our thinking about growth and we look at just maximizing growth. But if you look at a natural system like a beehive, for example, bees don't just build the biggest hive they possibly can right at the outset. They build the hive as it's needed, kind of a just-in-time approach. And importantly, they build it only as quickly as there are resources to support the ongoing maintenance and real vitality of that hive.
Mm-hmm.
And almost every investor, I think, has had a similar experience where they invested in an endeavor that looked like a real sprinter out of the gates, if you will, and eventually that sprinter stumbled because they didn't invest enough in maybe people or systems or infrastructure to support that rapid growth.
Or maybe companies that built too far, too much, too fast in anticipation
exactly.
of what they thought was to come, but they kind of outbuilt the capacity for customers or whatever it might be.
Right. It's a very common mistake. And it's not saying growth is bad or even
mm-hmm.
that fast growth is bad, but it's really focusing on how that growth is achieved as opposed to just what is achieved.
Well, you talked about the financial industry and the kind of this cookie cutter mechanized approach that takes place much of the time. We have even now, you know, the vast majority of transactions that take place being in this high frequency trading model where within milliseconds, you know, millions and millions of transactions are done. So what are the biggest challenges facing the financial industry today, in your view?
I think in my mind, there's a real distinction between investing and finance. And it's not a familiar distinction to many people, but to me, investing is really that primary transaction where you're trying to create something in the world, something of use and of value. So there's mutual exchange, there's connection, there's mutual benefit. And that's still at the core of what investing is really all about. What has grown really quickly, though, in recent decades is all the tools and mechanics and products and processes that surround that core. And that's what I call financing. It's the processing and the packaging and the reprocessing and repackaging often that we see around that core activity. And what I'd like to do with this book is just really orient all of us as investors back towards that essential core and to get closer in connection to what's actually happening in the world. It has a lot of parallels actually to the food system, you know, where we centralized a lot of things and automated a lot of things. And now we're finding a lot of people trying to peel away some of those layers of processing and get a little closer to those primary ingredients again.
Well, your book speaks to this biomimicry, and you say the simple question at its core is this WWND, what would nature do? So give us some practical examples of how biomimicry can be used in investing.
Sure. One thing that I did early on is just really looked at my own portfolio with these principles of nature in mind. And I realized that there were a lot of things in my portfolio where they did have that essential connection and kind of reciprocal relationship embedded in them. But sure enough, there were a lot of, you know, funds of funds and securities of securities.
Yeah.
And I tried really hard to step back and look at my own life and what purpose those vehicles were serving when it came to my own investment goals. And if I couldn't come up with a really clear purpose and a reason for them to be there, mm-hmm. I took that as an opportunity to trim out some of those layers and to find solutions that were still very active solutions, but maybe a little simpler, a little more elegant in their construction, as opposed to maybe overly engineered, as they were in some cases for me.
You know, it seems like a process that would reduce a lot of the noise that's in the system today that investors have so much trouble dealing with. And I think you make a very good point. You have these products of products or funds of funds, or you have derivatives based on something else, and then you have a new derivative based on the derivatives of that something else. And you've lost touch with what's going on in the core, and it's good to kind of come back to what the core meaning is. I know one big theme in the book as well is what you call feedback loops. And, you know, perhaps you can explain it when you're talking about the beehive again. Where's the feedback loop in a beehive, and how can we as investors utilize that to improve our results?
Sure. Well, feedback loops are a really important element of any natural system, and really, in fact, any system that functions in an effective way. And what you need for feedback loops are three things. One is a clear signal. The second is a receptor for that signal. And then the third is an appropriate response, not just any response, but an appropriate response. So if you think of that in a beehive, for example, bees are just terrific communicators, and we have a lot of great scientific research on this now. When bees communicate about resources for pollen and nectar, for example, they come back and they convey not only the location, but also the quality of the pollen and nectar. And importantly, it doesn't stop there. There's also a series of feedback loops coming from within the hive. So when there's actually enough pollen and nectar that's been gathered, the bees slow down their activity. Again, they don't just maximize for the sake of maximizing. There's a sense of sufficiency. So there are a couple things there to notice. One is that the loops actually feed on themselves and connect in a really wonderful way. And the second is that they're multidimensional. So when I look at that and compare it to investments, for a lot of us, our primary feedback loop is just price. And we've gotten really precise about that. You can get, you know, microsecond pricing data now. But I wonder if having, you know, microseconds of pricing data is as valuable as having similar data on something else, you know, maybe environmental impact or social impact or the how of growth that we talked about before. It seems to me that having a little less information on price and a little more information on other dimensions might help us to have a healthier system of feedback loops.
Yeah, so it's a question of the quality of information. Price does have information, but is it, you know, the end-all be-all of all the information that you need to get a good response in this feedback loop to make the best decision possible?
Exactly. And to me, this is very familiar. You know, I grew up in an investment organization that focused on fundamental research, and you would never just look at revenues, for example, mm-hmm. and not examine the rest of the financial statements. So I think this is something good investors are already very familiar with, and it's just putting it in a little different context.
My guest is Catherine Collins, and the book is The Nature of Investing, and you can kind of see the framework about this. We've got about a minute left, Catherine. You know, there was a part in the book that was very simple. You were talking about your colleagues at Fidelity and how you would all have to, it wasn't going around the water cooler so much, but there was some other place where you'd have to get, the Quotron.
Yeah.
Years ago, nobody had really a computer at their desk. You had one Quotron in the middle of the office somewhere, and everybody would gather around to get their quotes. And that was a form of getting feedback on what was going on in the world. Take us through that real quick.
absolutely. So this is a perfect example of something that's gotten much more efficient, but maybe less effective. So to get pricing information on stocks, and this isn't that long ago, it's the early 1990s, we still had to walk down the hall to a shared terminal and type in tickers one by one and wait for the information to come back to us. Now I can do that any minute of the day all over the world, just in my pocket on my phone. There's 10 apps that do it immediately. So the volume of information has gotten much more dramatic, and the speed has gotten much more efficient. In theory, that's a great thing. But what we benefited from were a few things. First, we had to actually walk down the hall with intent. You really had to wonder what the price was doing and have a reason to wonder about it. Mm-hmm. So there was an intention in the questioning. But most importantly, it connected us all to each other personally and also to what was happening in the rest of the market. You know, I would be there looking up construction stocks, but my colleague would be looking at oil prices. And then a third person would be looking at retail comps for the month. And you couldn't help but kind of soak up all that exchange. And it was a very organic, kind of natural bottom-up system. It wasn't something that had to be automated or mechanized.
So lots of questions that you want to ask in terms of how to take a more natural approach to investing. The book is The Nature of Investing. Very interesting stuff to read. My guest, Catherine Collins. Thank you so much for joining us, Catherine.
Thank you.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.